You know, if you think about a computer crashing, it usually fails in one of two very distinct ways.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Right? Like either the screen completely freezes up. So it's just this rigid, totally unresponsive block of pixels. Or it goes completely the other direction, you know, glitching out and spitting out this sort of meaningless seizure of static noise.
Yeah, the blue screen of death or just pure chaos.
Exactly. It's either locked up in absolute order or it's just dissolved into complete chaos.
It's a very binary way to fail, and it really highlights a fundamental problem in, well, any complex network,
All
because if
right.
you have too much structure, nothing moves. But with too much freedom, nothing holds its shape.
Which honestly got me thinking about the human brain.
Oh, sure.
Because how on earth does this wet, squishy network of billions of cells avoid those same two traps?
Right.
Because we have to avoid being so rigidly structured that we can't learn anything new, but we also have to avoid being so chaotic that we can't hold on to a single coherent thought.
It really is the ultimate tightrope act in biology. I mean, the brain is constantly managing a staggering amount of electrical energy,
Yeah.
and the margin for error to maintain that balance is incredibly small.
Well, that sets us up perfectly for the source material we are jumping into for today's deep dive.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one.
We are looking at this deeply compelling article from the OTW Journal, and it's titled The Edge of Chaos, Neural Criticality, and Psychedelics.
It's a phenomenal piece of scientific synthesis.
It really is.
It takes these concepts from theoretical physics, maps them onto the wet biology of neuroscience, and then applies all of that to the study of human consciousness.
So our mission today is to understand this razor-thin mathematical sweet spot where the brain actually operates.
Right.
And then we're going to look at how mind-altering substances might be pushing our brains even closer to that exact edge.
Yeah, it gets pretty wild.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because before we even look at a single brain cell, we need to establish the physics concept of criticality. And the article uses this fascinating sandpile analogy that I think really grounds this sort of abstract idea.
Well, the sandpile model was actually developed by physicists back in the late 1980s.
Okay.
Yeah, they used it to explain complex systems, and it really remains one of the best ways to visualize criticality.
Okay, so picture yourself dropping grains of sand, just one by one,
Ouch.
onto a flat table. At first, they just form a little mound, and eventually that mound builds up into a steep pile.
Yeah.
As you keep dropping grains, most of the time, absolutely nothing happens. The new grain just sits there.
Right, just finds a spot.
Exactly. Occasionally, a grain might cause a tiny little slide,
Yeah.
but every once in a while, you drop one single, seemingly insignificant grain, and it triggers this catastrophic collapse of the entire slope.
And the crucial element here is what happens when you measure the sizes of those avalanches over time.
Okay.
So if you plot the frequency of the avalanches against their size on a log
Wait,
graph,
a log graph?
it's just a way of compressing huge ranges of data into a readable format.
Okay, got it.
So when you plot it out, you don't get a random scatter of dots.
What do you get?
The data organizes itself into a perfectly straight line.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that straight line is the mathematical calling card of a system that has essentially tuned itself to the boundary between stability and collapse.
Exactly.
The article mentions we see this exact same signature in the size of earthquakes, the spread of forest fires, and even like the daily fluctuations of financial markets.
It's everywhere.
But what is mechanically happening beneath the surface to cause that? Like, why a straight line?
So to understand the mechanics, physicists look at something called the branching parameter.
The branching parameter.
Yeah, it's essentially a measurement of transmission rate.
Okay.
Think of it as the probability that one event will trigger the next. So if we map this onto a grid, like a forest, we are asking if one tree catches fire, what are the odds it ignites a neighboring tree?
Well, I guess if the forest is soaking wet, that probability is super low.
Exactly. If that branching parameter is incredibly low, so less than one, a spark lands and just fizzles out.
Right.
The system is frozen.
Got it.
Conversely, if the branching parameter is very high, so greater than one, the forest is bone dry.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, every single spark ignites a runaway explosion. Get this all-consuming fire that sweeps across the whole system and just erases whatever structure was there.
Okay, so less than one is our frozen computer screen.
Yes.
Greater than one is the chaotic static.
Exactly.
But wait, if a system is sitting constantly on the brink of a massive collapse, isn't that dangerous? I mean, why is that magical instead of just a recipe for disaster?
What's fascinating here is that we often view instability as a flaw.
Right, usually it is.
But in a complex biological network, it is the defining feature of intelligence.
Oh, wow.
When the branching parameter sits at exactly one, meaning one firing neuron triggers on average exactly one more neuron, the system achieves its largest possible dynamic range.
So dynamic range. I'd imagine that means the brain doesn't just tune out quiet signals, but it also doesn't get overwhelmed and deafened by loud ones.
Yeah, that is a mechanical benefit. A system at criticality can process the absolute maximum amount of information.
Okay.
It is exquisitely sensitive to new inputs, yet just stable enough not to shatter.
That makes sense.
Absolute order gives you reliability, but it's completely rigid. Complete chaos gives you novelty, but it's pure noise.
Right, the static.
Yeah. Criticality gives you the ability to retain a memory while simultaneously learning something completely new.
That theoretical physics side is incredibly elegant.
Yeah.
But moving from theoretical sand piles to the actual biology of the human brain inside our skulls.
Right, the wet stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
How do we know the cortex actually operates this way? Because here's where it gets really interesting.
Well, for a long time, it was just a beautiful theory.
Sure.
Physicists loved it, but biology is messy.
It's very messy.
It wasn't until 2003 that two neuroscientists, John Beggs and Dietmar Plenz, managed to find the biological proof.
Okay, what did they do?
They placed these incredibly thin slices of living rat cortex onto grids of microscopic electrodes.
Oh, wow. So they were physically tapping into the electrical grid of the tissue.
They were, but importantly, they didn't stimulate the tissue.
Oh, they didn't shock it or anything?
Nope. They just sat back and recorded the spontaneous resting activity of the neurons to see how the natural sparks behaved.
Just watching.
Just watching.
And they saw those sparks sweep across the electrode grid in bursts, which I think they named neuronal avalanches, right?
Yes, neuronal avalanches.
But the part I want to focus on is the math they extracted from those bursts.
Right.
Because they found that these neuronal avalanches followed a specific power law with an exponent of -3/2.
That's the one.
Let's demystify that number because it sounds incredibly dense.
It does.
What does an exponent of -3/2 actually mean for the brain?
It is essentially the mathematical heartbeat of a balanced system.
Okay.
In statistical mechanics, that specific exponent dictates the exact ratio of small avalanches to large avalanches.
So it's keeping score.
Basically. Mm. It means the probability of a massive brain-wide cascade happening is exponentially lower than a tiny local spark.
Oh, I see.
The network naturally suppresses massive explosions, but keeps enough connectivity to prevent the signals from just dying out.
Wow.
It's the exact mathematical ratio you expect to see in a critical branching process.
So the brain isn't just accidentally stumbling onto this sweet spot every now and then. Is it more like a tightrope walker constantly making micro adjustments to stay perfectly balanced on the wire?
That's a great way to picture it.
Like muscle twitches here, a shift in weight there, just to keep from falling off?
The scientific term for that is self-organized criticality.
Self-organized?
Yeah. The brain actively tunes itself toward that edge and works continuously to hold itself there.
Unbelievable.
And we know it isn't a fluke of that one 2003 experiment because we have seen this exact -3/2 signature across multiple scales of measurement since then.
Yeah. The article lists a whole alphabet soup of measurement tools to prove this, like EEG, MEG, and fMRI.
Let's break those down a bit because the scale of measurement really matters here.
Sure.
So EEG is picking up the broad electrical waves on the surface of the scalp.
Right, the surface stuff.
Exactly. MEG measures the tiny magnetic fields produced by neural firing.
Yeah.
And fMRI measures the slow, deep changes in blood flow associated with brain activity.
So vastly different technology.
Completely different. But across all of them, measuring from the level of a single cultured cell up to the entire human brain, the -3/2 mathematical signature is there.
It's just baked in.
Yeah.
The physics scales beautifully. Mm-hmm. But if the physical brain optimizes its computing power by balancing on this tightrope, it forces a profound follow-up question.
Right.
Does this mathematical firing rate map onto our actual subjective experience?
Yeah, that is the big question.
Like, does the literal feeling of being conscious require the brain to be at this edge?
That pushes us from neurobiology into the study of consciousness itself.
Yeah.
The OOTW article highlights some breakthrough 2022 research by Daniel Tocker and his team.
Okay, Daniel Tocker.
They wanted to track where the brain's branching parameter sits across vastly different states of human awareness.
So normal wakefulness, deep non-REM sleep, and surgical anesthesia.
Exactly.
Meaning they were measuring the brain's physical distance from that critical cliff edge in real time as people lost consciousness.
Right.
What did the data show?
Well, the cortex sits closest to the critical transition point precisely when consciousness is present and at its richest.
Okay, so if waking consciousness is the tightrope, what happens when we fall asleep or go under the knife for surgery?
Oh.
Like, which side of the cliff do we fall off? Because I would instinctively think that sleep is a chaotic state.
Hmm.
You know, dreams and all that.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it completely upends how we usually think about unconsciousness.
Really?
When awareness fades, the cortex doesn't dissolve into chaotic noise. It actually slides off the edge toward order.
Wait, toward the frozen computer state?
Yes.
That is so counterintuitive.
It is, but mechanically, think about what an anesthetic drug like propofol actually does.
Okay.
It binds to receptors in the brain and enhances inhibitory signals. It literally dampens the ability of neurons to talk to each other.
Oh, I see.
So the drug chemically forces the branching parameter to drop. The network becomes rigid and predictable.
A forced biological order.
Exactly.
And then it's...
Exactly. But they travel together so tightly that the edge of chaos seems to be the necessary dynamical playground for subjective experience to even exist.
Okay, so we know where deep sleep sits, down the slope of rigid order,
mm-hmm.
and we know normal waking consciousness sits safely hovering right at the edge.
All right.
So what happens if we push the brain's balance even further past its normal waking state?
That is where the 2020 findings by Thomas Farley and Robin Carhart-Harris come in.
This is the psychedelics part.
Yes, focusing on psychedelics. They were working off something called the entropic brain theory.
Entropy. Okay, entropy in physics is usually described as the measure of disorder or unpredictability.
Right.
So the entropic brain theory suggests what exactly? That a psychedelic drug creates a more disordered state.
Not purely disordered, but a state with a vastly wider vocabulary of possible patterns.
Okay, a wider vocabulary.
Yeah, the prediction was that substances like LSD and psilocybin actively push the cortex toward higher entropy.
Meaning toward chaos.
Meaning they push it nearer to the chaotic side of the critical edge, unlocking this massive repertoire of new network configurations.
To prove that, they measured something called the fractal dimension of the brain's activity
right.
while subjects were under the influence.
Right.
I need an analogy for this, because fractal dimension is a heavy concept.
It is.
So think of a normal, sober brainwave, like a simple, smooth country road. You know exactly where it goes. It's very predictable.
Okay, I like that.
Does a high fractal dimension mean that road suddenly has thousands of intricate side streets, alleys, and hidden paths opening up all at once?
That is an excellent way to visualize it. Fractal dimension is basically a measure of how intricate and layered a signal is when you really zoom in on it.
Okay.
And in complex systems, fractal dimension peaks right near the critical point.
Wow.
Varley's team found that LSD and psilocybin significantly increased the fractal dimension of cortical activity in both space and time.
So the brain's waves became incredibly intricate. If normal consciousness is standing safely at the edge of a cliff, the psychedelic state is leaning over the edge to look down. You're moving even closer to chaos.
The system just becomes vastly more complex. And the article points to another corroborating phenomenon called connectome harmonics.
Connectome harmonics?
Yeah. In a normal waking state, your brain relies on a few dominant, well-worn pathways to function.
Okay.
Like playing a very simple, repetitive chord on a piano.
Just the same notes over and over.
Right. Under a psychedelic, those dominant rhythms collapse, and the brain starts utilizing millions of overlapping high-frequency pathways.
Wow.
So all these different mathematical lenses are pointing to the exact same conclusion. The psychedelic mind is moving toward chaos.
Let's connect that abstract math to the actual phenomenological experience of taking a psychedelic.
Okay.
Because if the brain is pushed closer to criticality and the branching parameter goes up, that means a small perturbation, you know, a single stray thought, a visual image,
yeah.
a sudden emotion. That can cascade vastly further than it usually would in a normal sober state.
Precisely. Instead of staying local and contained, that thought propagates across the entire neural network.
The avalanches get bigger.
The avalanches get much bigger. And this perfectly explains the hallmark subjective reports of a psychedelic trip.
Like the profound sense that everything is connected.
Exactly. And the feeling of meaning flooding in from absolutely everywhere.
Because the physical boundaries in the brain's processing have dissolved.
Right.
The rigid structures that normally separate your visual cortex from your emotional processing centers are suddenly porous.
Yeah.
It makes complete mechanical sense why ego dissolution happens.
It really does.
Because the concept of the self is essentially a rigid, highly ordered pattern of thought.
Yes.
When you push the system toward entropy, that ordered pattern melts. The latent potential of the brain becomes actualized.
It bridges the spiritual and the mathematical beautifully.
It really does.
The dissolution of the ego is a literal shift toward higher entropy on a log graph.
I struggle to buy this completely, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if the brain is literally always on the verge of chaotic collapse, why don't we see more frequent spontaneous seizures in healthy people?
That's a fair point.
Like, is this math actually mapping to biological reality, or is a clean line on a log graph just an elegant illusion?
This raises an important question, and we absolutely have to examine the scientific friction here.
Right.
Because criticality is a beautiful narrative, but it is fiercely debated in neuroscience.
Okay.
The article brings in a 2022 review by researchers O'Byrne and Jerby titled How Critical is Brain Criticality?
Oh, right
here. And they lay out several major caveats.
Let's hear the skeptical evidence then.
First, many researchers argue the brain is not perfectly critical, but rather quasi-critical or subcritical.
Quasi-critical.
Yeah, they argue evolution would design a brain to stay safely back from the edge to specifically prevent those runaway seizures you mentioned.
Oh, I see. So we might be near the cliff, but safely behind a guardrail.
Exactly. Furthermore, power laws. You know those straight lines on a graph we talked about?
Yeah.
They can arise for entirely mundane reasons that have absolutely nothing to do with a complex system balancing on an edge.
Wait, really? Like what?
Well, you can find power laws in the frequency of words used in a novel or the population sizes of cities.
Oh, well.
It doesn't mean a city is undergoing a physical phase transition.
So just finding the math doesn't prove the biological mechanism.
Right.
What about the psychedelic research specifically?
Well, the psychedelic imaging studies suffer from the classic limitations of modern neuroscience.
Which are?
The sample sizes are incredibly small.
Ah, right.
And they rely on indirect proxies, like measuring the fractal dimension of an fMRI blood flow signal.
Which is pretty far removed from the actual neurons.
It is a slow, blurry metric compared to measuring individual neurons firing in a dish.
Yeah.
And crucially, they show correlation, not causation.
So if the scientists are still fighting over whether the brain is truly critical or just mimicking criticality, why should our listeners care about the sand pile?
Because even if the exact pinpoint location of the edge is debated, the overall directional movement is incredibly robust.
Okay.
The data clearly shows that anesthesia moves the mind toward rigid order.
Right.
And psychedelics move the mind toward complex flexibility.
Okay, yeah.
The critical brain hypothesis provides a convergent framework for understanding the mechanics of human thought.
Mm-hmm.
It is really the best language we currently have to explain why extreme order is deadening and why the mind requires a healthy degree of instability to thrive.
So what does this all mean? If we zoom out from the electrodes and the theoretical physics,
yeah.
I think the biggest takeaway is that we need to reframe how we view our own minds.
Definitely.
Because we spend so much time striving for a safe middle ground. You know, trying to achieve perfect order and complete predictability in our thoughts and our lives.
We absolutely culturally view instability and unpredictability as enemies to be defeated.
Right. But this research clearly demonstrates that order alone is essentially a biological death.
Yeah.
It's anesthesia. It's the frozen computer.
Mm-hmm.
And chaos alone is just meaningless noise.
Yeah.
Our greatest moments of flexibility, of profound insight, of rich, vibrant consciousness,
right.
They don't happen in the safe middle. They happen precisely at the seam between the two.
And, you know, as we step back and apply this to our day-to-day lives, there's a really provocative way to interpret this.
Oh, yeah.
We learned that deep sleep and anesthesia physically push the brain off the edge into rigid order.
Right.
But think about your day-to-day waking life. Think about moments of extreme mental rigidity, like
what?
Like deep-seated anxiety loops, incredibly stubborn bad habits, or massive creative blocks where you feel completely incapable of seeing a new solution.
When you just feel totally stuck in a rut.
Exactly. Could those common experiences simply be moments where our normal waking brain has accidentally slid slightly too far down that slope of order?
Oh, wow.
Where the branching parameter has temporarily dropped and the sparks of new ideas are just fizzling out in the damp forest before they can cascade?
That reframes so much. because we usually associate anxiety with a chaotic loss of control.
Right.
But you're suggesting anxiety might actually be an excess of rigid order in the brain's network, like a thought loop that is too structured to allow new information in.
Yes. And if that's true, finding our way back to mental health or finding a creative breakthrough might literally just be a matter of learning how to safely climb back up the slope, loosen the network, and return to the edge of chaos.
The edge is where we are most alive. What an incredible thought to end on.